Our text this morning, a couple of familiar parables from the lost and found section of the Gospel of Luke. There's the first 10 verses of the 15th chapter. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming to listen to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." And so he told them this parable. "Which one of you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after one that was lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends, his neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost.' Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one of them," it would probably be coins in a dowry, which she actually wore on her head, "does not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends, her neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost.' Just so I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." May God bless this reading and hearing of this holy word. I suspect you're all familiar with the phrase, an act of God. In legal parlance, it is the unforeseeable or inevitable occurrence, such as a tornado, caused by nature and not by human beings. You know, I don't know why an act of God always has to be destructive. I mean, why don't we talk about births or falling in love as an act of God? But that's just not the way it is in the world of law and insurance. But there was an incident a while back in which this phrase took on a, well, somewhat cloudier meaning. Highway 101 north of Los Angeles was blocked at Sea Cliff north of Ventura when a Southern Pacific freight train derailed, dumping 76 drums of aqueous hydrazine, a suspected carcinogen. 8 drums broke, the dangerous fumes driving 300 people from their homes and forcing thousands of not exactly patient motorists to take a 35-mile detour through windy mountain roads. I didn't want to think about that traffic jam that day. Well, the cause of the derailment was not in dispute, but the cause of the cause was. It was agreed that a bearing had overheated, causing an axle to snap off a car. A Federal Railroad Administration official called this overheating a freak thing, you know, one of those acts of God. She insisted, "It's like something we call summer kinks. When a track heats up and melts and causes an accident, it's an act of God." But a state safety official disagreed. "It could be a bearing. Then again, it could be a faulty axle," he said. "It's premature to call this an act of God. I haven't heard anything from my staff that answers the question of what exactly caused this accident." Now understand that these people arguing over acts of God were not theologians. They're railroad people. And for them, an act of God seemed to be anything from "I haven't got a clue" to "don't look at me." Major copping out going here. God for them seemed to be the unexplainable and often destructive darkness just beyond our little patch of light. When all other explanations fail, especially if it's bad, let's call it an act of God. Jesus, however, would seem to think, have another idea about this. Let's think for a moment about the context of these very familiar parables. Clearly, he's in trouble again. What has he done this time to so upset the religious establishment? This fellow welcomes sinners, tax collectors, and eats with them. I recall a newspaper article about the pubs in Oxford, England. I don't usually spend a lot of time reading about pubs, but this one was somewhat interesting. It said, a good pub is a ready-made party, a home away from home, a club anyone can join. Now, you know, I want to be careful. I don't want to offend anyone's religious sensibilities this morning, but you know, it's not hard for me to imagine the Jesus of Luke 15 in such a place, eating and drinking with anyone, welcoming anyone who happened to show up, even the tax collectors and sinners. Now, I have to confess that since tomorrow is the day that quarterly taxes are due, I'm not really excited about the whole tax collector thing this morning. Jesus, please, not them, not them. But yes, even the tax collectors, all are welcome. He receives them. He invites them in. And those who enforce the standards of proper conduct, who know who should eat where, who know who is welcome, who is not welcome, who is in, who is out, these are the people that grumble. And it is response to this grumbling that Jesus tells these stories. My mind goes back to that phrase, acts of God. And according to Jesus, it would in fact seem that one of the most significant and ongoing acts of God is the seeking, finding, welcoming, and saving of those who are lost. But who are the lost? And who are the shepherds? And who is that woman searching and searching and rejoicing when she finds that which is lost? A Fred Craddock story. During a gathering dark of summer evenings, we kids played in a great yard amidst circling woods. We played hide and seek. There was always one kid who spoiled the whole game by being too good at hiding. Every kid ought to know that in hide and seek, you want to hide well, but not too well. Eventually, you must be found. But this kid was great at hiding. He would go way out beyond the yard into the dark woods, or he'd go down into the basement where nobody wanted to go to look for him. You know somebody who, though not a kid, is really good at hiding? Well, anyway, one by one, the people would be found. Oh, shucks, you found me, each one would say. But this one kid would never be found. And so we'd give up and go on to another game. He would eventually come back furious at us. The purpose of the game is hide and seek, he would say, not hide and give up. But Craddock concludes, there are just some people who are so good at hiding, so good at camouflaging themselves, so good at tucking themselves away where nobody would ever dare to look. You know somebody like that? Do you know somebody who's just waiting, hoping to be found? Could we be that person? I don't know what crosses your mind when you first hear this parable. One possible response, which we actually discussed at our Bible study this morning, is that if God, the shepherd, favors the lost, cares for the one even at the expense of the 99, where does that leave me? I try to follow the rules, do what is right, show up to church, live a good and faithful life. Am I somehow being excluded in this teaching of Jesus? As he gathers at his table, the lost, the lonely, the forsaken, is there still a place there for me? You know, it's not hard to imagine the Pharisees thinking just that. They were God-fearing men. They wanted to do right, uphold the law, live their lives according to God's will. What are they supposed to do with this guy who receives and welcomes sinners even as he admonishes the righteous? And I've heard this question, this critique from church folks over the years. Is Jesus excluding me because I come to church every Sunday and follow the rules? But that's why I really like that Craddock story. For he seems to say that no matter who we are, saint or sinner, at some level of our being, we are wandering and alone and far from home. Deep down, there is a part of each and every one of us that is lost and waiting to be found. Once heard a story told by an old rancher explaining why cows so often end up lost and wandering on open roads. He said, a cow is nibbling on one tuft of grass in the middle of the field and pretty soon moves to another tuft and to another tuft. And before you know it, she's eating some grass right next to the fence. Well, then she notices a nice tuft of grass just on the other side of the fence. So she stumbles through an old tear in the fence and finds herself outside, and before you know it, there she is in the middle of the road. Cows don't intend to get lost, he said. They just nibble their way to lostness. Well, I don't want to suggest we're like cows, but that may not be a bad description of us. We don't intend to get lost, but we just somehow gradually nibble our way there. The daily routine, anxieties, fears, poor decisions, guilt over things done or not done, regrets, apathy, the gnawing sense that somehow maybe I was meant for more than this. It all adds up. A tuft here, a tuft there, until we wake up to discover we have nibbled our way to lostness. And we can feel so far from home. No idea how to get back. But then, just when we're starting to despair, just when we're so filled with regret and guilt, when we feel unable to undo our mistakes, just when we feel reconciliation is no longer possible and we can never retrace our steps and make things right, just then, we hear this story about a God who's always one step ahead of us. A God who's not only gracious, but also resourceful. Think of that woman looking for the coin. A God who not only loves, but who also seeks, searches, finds, and saves the beloved, the lost. With this God, home is always waiting. Love's door is always open. And it's so near. So very near. And then just one final point to be made here. One more possibility from this text. Jesus asks, which of you, having 100 sheep, which of you? In other words, don't just listen to the story from the sheep's perspective. Imagine yourself, the shepherd, leaving the flock to find the one lost in the wilderness. Imagine yourself, not the lost coin, but the woman seeking desperately to find it. The parable begins to take on a little different sound. It is no longer just about us being found and loved in spite of our lostness, our weakness, our shortcomings. Instead, it becomes a story of seeking, sweeping, finding, and rejoicing. As one pastor says, the invitation is not about being rescued by Jesus over and over again, but about joining him in rounding up God's herd, recovering God's treasure. It is about questioning the idea that there are certain conditions the lost must meet before they are eligible to be found, or that there are certain qualities they must exhibit before we will seek them out. It is about trading in our high standards on a strong flashlight and a good broom. It's about discovering the joy of finding. Yet another of the acts of God. And I know, it's crazy, it's insane, the story. Not at all practical. When Jesus says, which of you, we know the answer. None of us. No rational person is going to act this way. Leave the 99 to find one. It's preposterous to think of a shepherd doing this. There's no choice but to sacrifice the one to save the many. It's obvious. Trouble is, you see, believe it or not, it isn't all about me. This is a story about God. And about how God acts. The lengths to which God will go to bring home the lonely and the lost. And as outrageous as it is, there's an invitation here. An invitation to join in the searching, and especially to join in the rejoicing. I think of the words of that Joan Osborne song, what if God was one of us trying to make his way home? Well, of course, that's precisely what we see and proclaim in the life of teaching of Jesus. God becoming one of us, sharing our humanity, even sharing our lostness. Jesus understands the struggle with being lost, struggling to return. So he does not turn away, but instead always turns toward the lost, taking great risks to make a place for them, to welcome them home. A rabbi actually sounded much like a Protestant minister when he said, in any community, if there are two Jews, there are three synagogues. The one you go to, the one I go to, and the one neither one of us would be caught dead in. So much the story of the Christian church. Actually, these days, sadly, also seems to be the story of Congress. So much exclusion, so much judgment, so many lines in the sand. But Jesus goes another way. He asks, which of you? And then he goes. And as he goes, he kind of looks over his shoulder to see who's following. All of our communities opening doors of welcome and rejoicing. Note that element of joy in these parables. Sinners and tax collectors, Pharisees and church members, all gathered together at the table with Christ. Rejoice, laugh, be glad. They, like us, have returned home, and we all now are in the presence of God. Take another look at that shepherd coming home, laughing and singing with the lost sheep over his shoulder. When one in our community goes missing, all are affected. When one is restored, we are all the better for it. All are included. None are lost. Let the party begin. We can feast. Hope is restored. That's how it is in the household of God.
As we come to this time of